Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, October 10th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Leaders, Analysts, Eye Impact of ExxonMobil Pioneer Deal. Rystad analyst, ExxonMobil's potential acquisition of Pioneer could usher in a new shale 4.0 era. By Mella McEwen, oil editor. Business media, from the Wall Street Journal to New York Times, Reuters to Bloomberg, have been teeming with reports ExxonMobil was close to a deal to buy Pioneer Natural Resources for up to $60 billion. Both companies sent the Reporter Telegram statements saying they don't comment on market rumors. What comes to mind first is employment and the impact on employees of both Pioneer and ExxonMobil. Guy McCrary, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Permian Basin Area Foundation, told the Reporter Telegram by telephone. McCrary noted that Pioneer has been a great corporate citizen for years in both Midland and the Permian Basin. His hope is, should the deal come to pass, ExxonMobil would continue and perhaps expand that corporate citizenship, much like ConocoPhillips continued Concho Resources community initiatives after acquiring Concho. Rumors of an ExxonMobil Pioneer deal first surfaced in April, noted Matthew Bernstein, senior shale analyst with Rystad Energy. The recent return of the rumor to the spotlight means the potential combination could forever change the shale industry. A deal the size of ExxonMobil's potential acquisition of Pioneer could usher in a new shale 4.0 era, Bernstein wrote in an analysis. The period of capital discipline since 2019 has colloquially been called shale 3.0, with its capital-conscious nature standing in stark contrast to the technological advancements of the industry's early beginnings and the free-spending nature of its rapid rise. While capital discipline would still reign supreme, the shale 4.0 era would be unmistakably marked by consolidation. It would see high-spending supermajors, already in possession of large portions of the tight oil inventory, consolidate swaths of shale resources under their hold. Should such a combination come to pass, Andrew Dittmer, Senior Vice President at Enverus Intelligence Research, agreed it would be an historic shale deal. We view the potential merger, which would carry a price tag of $60 billion, according to the Wall Street Journal, as a significant win for ExxonMobil and a reasonable conclusion for Pioneer, at a reported approximately 9% premium to its share price at its prior day close, he told the Reporter Telegram by email. Dittmer added that the $60 billion was viewed as an attractive price tag that would give ExxonMobil a unique Permian portfolio that offers such scale, quality, and high proportion of operatorship and underdeveloped acreage that mitigates the risk of interference from parent wells. Bernstein wrote that, while the industry has been marked by capital discipline and modest growth in the name of shareholder returns, there has been a more notable shift in industry attitudes this year. With inventory on the front of investor and operator minds alike, it has been quietly acknowledged that the sector is now operating as a mature business, Bernstein wrote. While Rystad Energy still sees production growth on the cards in the near term, a more disciplined approach to growth has been sought to help secure the stability of the business in the long run. Enverus has long viewed ExxonMobil as the most likely first-mover buyer in large-scale Permian M&A, due in part to its aggressive growth targets. In addition to viewing Pioneer as its ideal acquisition candidate, Dittmer wrote. A key remaining question, aside from whether the deal will materialize at the reported price, is whether such a deal would affect ExxonMobil's current development pace in the Permian, which already targets a differentiated double-digit growth rate that exceeds Pioneer's, he wrote. We estimate Pioneer holds 6,300 net locations of high-quality inventory, well locations that generate a 10% return at a WTI price of below $50, or 16 years of drilling activity at its current rig cadence. Such duration of operated inventory leads oil-weighted shale producers and would be significantly accretive to ExxonMobil's duration, Dittmer wrote. Dittmer concluded, "The key implication for the rest of the sector, in our view, would be setting a precedent for a reasonable premium in large-scale M&A activity. We suspect other large caps that are hungry for inventory would view the deal positively for any efforts to pursue similar deals." This article is entitled, "Two Arrested in Connection with Murder Investigation," by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. Two Midlanders were arrested in connection with a Monday morning murder investigation in North Midland, according to the Midland Police Department. MPD reported that officers responded at 1:14 a.m. to a call in the 4500 block of North Big Spring Street in reference to a deceased male. Upon arrival, officers found the body of Raul Ortega, a 25-year-old, behind the convenience store. The preliminary investigation revealed Ortega was fatally beaten, MPD reported. Carlos Diaz Jr., 22, and Angel Alvarado, 19, were arrested in connection with Ortega's death. Diaz and Alvarado are being held in the Midland County Detention Center. Next of kin has been notified. The investigation is still ongoing. This article is entitled City. We aren't aware of any issues related to fishy smell, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The City of Midland is not aware of any issues related to a smell that covered a portion of the city on Monday morning. When asked about a fish smell that had been reported, the city stated, "We are not aware of any issues at this time." The city later added that fire department officials were taking air quality monitors out to see if anything in the air could cause breathing difficulties. The reporter telegram has contacted the Texas Commission of Environmental Quality about the smell. The TECQ reported, "The TCEQ Midland Regional Office has not received any reports of fish-like odors in the area. Concerned citizens who are experiencing these odors can file a complaint at the following link, tceq.texas.gov/compliance/complaints. By early afternoon, the smell wasn't as strong or had gone away in areas of Midland. This article is entitled City Business Includes $2.8 million in Machinery Vehicle Purchases, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The Midland City Council will have the opportunity to purchase more than $2.8 million in machinery and vehicles for the City of Midland at its meeting on Tuesday. The Midland City Council will meet at 10 a.m. in Council Chamber at Midland City Hall. The items on the consent agenda include a wheeldozer compactor from Warren Power and Machinery, Inc. of Odessa, for a total of $1.498 million. An asphalt paver from B Equipment Sales Limited of Lubbock for a total cost of $267,749.33. A sewer jet vac from Houston Freightliner, Inc. of Houston for a total cost of $555,119.49. Two Chevrolet Police Tahoes for the Municipal Court from Caldwell Automotive Partners Limited of Caldwell for a total cost of $140,924. One Reelmaster 5510D Fairway Mower, one Workman HDX2WD Golf Cart, one Greenmaster Triflex Mower, one SandPro 5040 Trap Rack, one Riding SandPro, one ProCore Aerator, and one ProCore Aerifier, all for Hogan Park Golf Course, from Professional Turf Products of Euless, for a total cost of $359,615.20. The $2.828 million cost is less than the $3.204 million the City of Midland budgeted for the items, according to information in the Council's agenda packet. This article is entitled City to Consider Property Tax Abatement for Hotel Project, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The Midland City Council will vote on an agreement with a downtown hotel developer that includes a 10-year property tax abatement. The hotel project will be located at 112 South Lorraine Street, and the City of Midland reports that the proposed agreement with L.S. Brentway, LLC, includes a 100% property tax abatement and for an incentive of up to $25,000 annually for 10 years, potentially $250,000. City officials also stated there is the possibility of a hotel occupancy tax reimbursement up to $200,000 a year for 10 years. The company has to show eligible marketing and advertising expenses to get reimbursed, according to the city. The planned renovation project will result in a 34,000-square-foot hotel, the City of Midland reported. At a minimum, the project would include a 6-story hotel with 80 guest rooms, a boardroom, a market or pantry area, a fitness facility, a lounge area with a lobby, and an upscale restaurant and bar. The project will include a minimum of $15 million in construction costs, and the hotel will carry the Hilton Tapestry brand standards, the City of Midland reported. On April 24, 2001, the City of Midland elected to be eligible to participate in tax abatement. And more recently, on November 15, 2022, established the city's guidelines and criteria for tax abatement agreements in accordance with Chapter 312 of the Texas Tax Code. The city reported that it has notified other taxing entities of the proposed abatement and date for consideration by the City Council. Construction must start within 6 months of permit issuance. The Reporter Telegram has previously reported about a project, the Tapestry Hotel by Hilton. Developers had stated they planned on asking the Midland City Council for a 10-year tax abatement on hotel occupancy tax and property tax. Midland Central Appraisal District at the time listed the property's market value as $1.2 million. Tapestry Hotel by Hilton eventually would bring more than 10 times the amount of property taxes to Midland, ranging from approximately $200,000 to $300,000 in taxes to Midland ISD every year, to approximately $20,000 to $30,000 to the Midland Hospital District, according to a fact sheet provided earlier this year. This is not the same project as the Hotel Santa Rita project that is still being negotiated for the land near Centennial Park, including the site where the Western United Life building once stood. The developers there are Midland Downtown Renaissance LP, and its project is a $125 million to $140 million full-service hotel. MDR, in its proposal, stated that public support will be needed, including, but not limited to, the following forms: 100% hotel occupancy tax rebates over a long period, rebate of the city's portion of sales tax over a long period, rebate of the city's portion of property tax over a long period, conveyance of a shovel-ready site for the surface parking lot, structured parking garage in Phase 2 at no cost, waiving of all city permit fees for construction, substantial cash incentive payments during the construction and opening periods to cover any remaining construction cost deficits, which could range from $15 to $30 million, excluding Phase 2. Grants, rebates, and incentives similar to those above for Phase 2, the structured parking garage, at such time as Phase 2 makes economic sense. MDR will also pursue any federal, state, and county incentive programs that may be available to assist with the project and the city. City leaders recently approved 10 years of full tax abatements for Bass Pro Shops in Northwest Midland and other incentives related to infrastructure and sales tax. This article is entitled "Exxon CEO Bets on Oil's Staying Power" by Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. ExxonMobil Corporation boss Darren Woods is poised to emulate his two predecessors with a career-defining mega-deal that, for better or worse, would likely transform the oil giant. Exxon's talks to buy Pioneer Natural Resources Company, a U.S. rival with a market value of $55 billion, represent a strategic bet underpinned by Woods' belief that oil and gas will be central to the world's energy mix for decades to come, whatever path the transition to a lower carbon future takes. But the bet comes with risks. It would form a shale-focused giant producing nearly 4.5 million barrels of oil equivalent a day, 50% more than the next biggest supermajor. At a time when the world is still seeking ways to slash greenhouse gases, the merger also may raise antitrust concerns. Big strategic bets with the potential to shape the future of the world's energy system have strong precedent at Exxon, which has survived wars, nationalization, and public outcry throughout its 140-year history. Former Chief Executive Officer Lee Raymond's successful $80 billion merger with Mobil Corporation in 1999 ushered in the era of the cost-cutting supermajor amid low oil prices, successfully positioning the company for the commodity supercycle of the 2000s. By contrast, Rex Tillerson's ill-timed $31 billion acquisition of XTO Energy in 2010 was called the top of the early U.S. shale gas revolution and preceded a decade of low industry returns. The potential Pioneer deal will similarly define Woods' tenure, now into its sixth year. While electric cars, batteries and renewable power are growing fast, global oil demand is currently at a record high, and the International Energy Agency expects continued growth to 105.7 million barrels a day in 2028, from about 100 million barrels now. Analysts expect peak oil to come as soon as the early 2030s, but whether it plateaus or declines rapidly is uncertain. Either way, Pioneer is likely to be valuable to Exxon as it navigates the energy transition. Shale provides much more flexible production, with wells brought on in months compared to years for offshore developments. The Permian Basin's proximity to Exxon's Gulf Coast refineries give it a built-in advantage over more risky developments overseas. Woods may even be able to make a low-carbon case for the purchase. Exxon currently plans to reach net zero in the Permian by 2030 for its own operations, though not from customers burning its oil and gas. Raymond's merger with Mobil also fit the tenor of the times. It added refineries and international resources in an era of anxiety over non-OPEC production. Raymond aggressively cut costs, drove efficiencies, and by 2008, less than a decade after the deal, Exxon produced what was then the highest profit of any U.S. corporation in history. Tillerson's purchase of XTO sought to position Exxon to be the dominant player in the shale revolution, as the U.S. went from being short of gas to having an abundance. The problem for Tillerson was that he underestimated the size and speed of the shift in gas production, which quickly overwhelmed pipeline infrastructure and domestic demand. That sent prices crashing from more than $4 per British thermal unit at the time of the deal to average $3 for the following decade. In the years that followed, it turned out the real money in shale was in oil, such as that in the Permian Basin, not gas. The potential Pioneer transaction is unlikely to suffer the same fate, according to Raoul LeBlanc, a senior analyst at S&P Global. Pioneer's oil and gas production is well linked to global markets, and Exxon already has a significant expertise in the Permian. It had little experience of shale gas when it bought XTO and ran the company as a separate division for several years after the purchase. XTO was an entry into shale at a time when shale plays were less mature and better suited to risk-taking independence, LeBlanc said in an interview. This is a very different deal. It's a proven resource with low risk and lots of economies of scale. As ever, a key determining factor in the deal's success will be its price, which the Wall Street Journal reported could be roughly $60 billion, citing people familiar with the matter. That strikes us as slightly low for a company with the unique scale and quality of inventory held by Pioneer, said Andrew Dittmer, a senior analyst at Enverus. Exxon has been one of the best-performing energy stocks coming out of the pandemic as demand for oil and gas surged, then got an additional boost from Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The company's shares have more than tripled in the past 3 years, outperforming Pioneer by more than 40 percentage points, even after Friday's moves. The company also built up a cash position of $30 billion, nearly 10 times the level 2 years ago, prompting speculation that Woods was building up a war chest. While XOM's balance sheet and large cash hoard would enable it to pay mostly or all in cash, we anticipate any deal to include a mix of cash and equity, Dittmer said in an interview. When asked about potential deals in July, Exxon would be picky, Woods said, indicating that any purchase would have to sit within the company's core skill set, as opposed to a new play like XTO. The opportunities have to be bigger than what ExxonMobil or any potential acquisition could do independent of one another, he said. 1 plus 1 has to equal 3 here. This article is entitled Global Oil Markets on Edge After Sudden Israel Attack by Alaric Nightingale, Bloomberg. The shock attack by Hamas and Israel's response risk a wider destabilization of the region, and the global oil market is watching. There are sprawling questions about the geopolitical consequences of the conflict, which erupted 50 years after the Yom Kippur War that foreshadowed the 1970s oil crisis. There is no suggestion that the fallout from the current situation will be comparable to what happened back then, but it could alter the geopolitical landscape of the Middle East in unpredictable ways. Israel has broadly pointed the finger at Iran following the attack. Tehran has denied involvement, but President Ebrahim Raisi called it a victory. Before the weekend, Saudi Arabia had been close to a deal with Israel that could have brought increased stability to the region. The U.S. and Iran were engaged in broad but largely unacknowledged efforts to reach a kind of détente, and with it, higher oil flows. Many of the geopolitical considerations will hinge on how far Israel takes its response, particularly with regard to Iran. For now, these are the most immediate considerations for oil traders. 1. Sanctions enforcement. There is a widely held belief in the oil market that the U.S. has turned something of a blind eye to sanctions on Iran's oil flows, allowing shipments to soar in recent months. That has helped keep a lid on oil prices in a market that has seen a huge loss of supply from Saudi Arabia, Russia, and the rest of OPEC+. There is a chance that the U.S. could take aim at this trade. The Islamic Republic currently sells the bulk of its crude exports to China, sending 1.5 million barrels a day, the most in a decade, in August, according to data intelligence firm Kepler. It's hard to be sure how much control the U.S. can really exert. Since Iranian sanctions were reimposed in 2018, sales to Chinese customers have increasingly been transacted in yuan, or via barter trade, and executed by local banks to circumvent Western restrictions. Oil is transported on Iran's own tankers, or so-called dark fleet vessels, using a supply chain that U.S. authorities can't easily control. Any outcome that cuts Iran's oil flow could boost demand for Russia's barrels, an undesirable outcome for Washington or other Group of Seven nations trying to cut Moscow's access to petrodollars. What's more, any move to clamp down would tighten the oil market, a big decision to take going into an election year in the U.S. 2. Hormuz disturbance. The Strait of Hormuz connects oil-producing countries in the Persian Gulf to refineries all over the world. It is a transit point for one in every 6 barrels that the world consumes, and a stretch of water over which Iran has often claimed dominion. It's vital to the global energy market. For now, there's no sign Tehran is moving to disrupt merchant shipping, something it has done in recent times, often in tit-for-tat measures. Hormuz has never truly halted. Not in the tanker war of 1984, in which Iran and Iraq would routinely attack each other's oil carriers. And not in more recent times, when Tehran stepped up vessel seizures and harassment of merchant shipping. Halting Hormuz hurts Iran's allies. That doesn't mean it can't be significantly disrupted, even to the point of disrupting the flow of oil, but it's hard to see it being fully stopped. Beyond the strait, There have also been instances in recent years where Iran's own oil shipments have been intercepted and disrupted by Western powers, another source of potential disruption in an escalation. 3. How wide? The readout from the conflict for the oil market rests very much on what Israel does in the coming days, weeks, and months. Iran is a very big wild card, and there will be a focus on how strongly Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu blames Tehran for facilitating the attacks, RBC Capital Markets LLC analysts, including Halima Croft, said in a note. 4. Strategic releases. If the conflict ultimately spirals into something that affects oil supply or boosts oil prices for a prolonged period, it would be a justification for the U.S. government to further sell barrels from its strategic petroleum reserve. That could quell short-term oil price moves, but it would nevertheless leave the U.S. needing to replenish its stockpile at some point in the future. 5. History as a guide. For all these risks, there is nevertheless a chance that this war ultimately proves to be immaterial for the oil market. Turmoil in the region in recent times hasn't been a catalyst for structural moves higher in oil prices. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, October 10th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Leaders, Analysts, Eye Impact of ExxonMobil Pioneer Deal. Rystad analyst, ExxonMobil's potential acquisition of Pioneer could usher in a new shale 4.0 era. By Mella McEwen, oil editor. Business media, from the Wall Street Journal to New York Times, Reuters to Bloomberg, have been teeming with reports ExxonMobil was close to a deal to buy Pioneer Natural Resources for up to $60 billion. Both companies sent the Reporter Telegram statements saying they don't comment on market rumors. What comes to mind first is employment and the impact on employees of both Pioneer and ExxonMobil. Guy McCrary, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Permian Basin Area Foundation, told the Reporter Telegram by telephone. McCrary noted that Pioneer has been a great corporate citizen for years in both Midland and the Permian Basin. His hope is, should the deal come to pass, ExxonMobil would continue and perhaps expand that corporate citizenship, much like ConocoPhillips continued Concho Resources community initiatives after acquiring Concho. Rumors of an ExxonMobil Pioneer deal first surfaced in April, noted Matthew Bernstein, senior shale analyst with Rystad Energy. The recent return of the rumor to the spotlight means the potential combination could forever change the shale industry. A deal the size of ExxonMobil's potential acquisition of Pioneer could usher in a new shale 4.0 era, Bernstein wrote in an analysis. The period of capital discipline since 2019 has colloquially been called shale 3.0, with its capital-conscious nature standing in stark contrast to the technological advancements of the industry's early beginnings and the free-spending nature of its rapid rise. While capital discipline would still reign supreme, the shale 4.0 era would be unmistakably marked by consolidation. It would see high-spending supermajors already in possession of large portions of the tight oil inventory consolidate swaths of shale resources under their hold. Should such a combination come to pass, Andrew Dittmer, Senior Vice President at Enverus Intelligence Research, agreed It would be an historic shale deal. We view the potential merger, which would carry a price tag of $60 billion, according to the Wall Street Journal, as a significant win for ExxonMobil and a reasonable conclusion for Pioneer, at a reported approximately 9% premium to its share price at its prior day close, he told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Dittmer added that the $60 billion was viewed as an attractive price tag that would give ExxonMobil a unique Permian portfolio that offers such scale, quality, and high proportion of operatorship and underdeveloped acreage that mitigates the risk of interference from parent wells. Bernstein wrote that, while the industry has been marked by capital discipline and modest growth in the name of shareholder returns, there has been a more notable shift in industry attitudes this year. With inventory on the front of investor and operator minds alike, it has been quietly acknowledged that the sector is now operating as a mature business, Bernstein wrote. While Rystad Energy still sees production growth on the cards in the near term, a more disciplined approach to growth has been sought to help secure the stability of the business in the long run. Enverus has long viewed ExxonMobil as the most likely first-mover buyer in large-scale Permian M&A, due in part to its aggressive growth targets. In addition to viewing Pioneer as its ideal acquisition candidate, Dittmer wrote. A key remaining question, aside from whether the deal will materialize at the reported price, is whether such a deal would affect ExxonMobil's current development pace in the Permian, which already targets a differentiated double-digit growth rate that exceeds Pioneer's, he wrote. We estimate Pioneer holds 6,300 net locations of high-quality inventory, well locations that generate a 10% return at a WTI price of below $50, or 16 years of drilling activity at its current rig cadence. Such duration of operated inventory leads oil-weighted shale producers and would be significantly accretive to ExxonMobil's duration, Dittmer wrote. Dittmer concluded, "The key implication for the rest of the sector, in our view, would be setting a precedent for a reasonable premium in large-scale M&A activity. We suspect other large caps that are hungry for inventory would view the deal positively for any efforts to pursue similar deals." This column is called Opinion. It is entitled, "Show You Care, Vote for Proposition 9," by Patricia Maurer, guest columnist. Like many Texans of his generation, my dad favored old expressions. I once remember hearing him tell my mom the story of a neighbor who was down on his luck. "Poor old guy, worked like a mule all his life, and now forced to go hat in hand to care for his family." The saying "hat in hand" refers to someone who doffs their hat as an act of humility when asking for something, usually money. Oddly, this expression came to mind when thinking about an issue that will come before the voters of Texas on Election Day, November 7th. On November 7th, the voters of Texas are going to be asked to approve Proposition 9, which authorizes a COLA, or cost of living adjustment, for some, not all, retired school employees. This group includes teachers, nurses, counselors, secretaries, librarians, bus drivers, cafeteria workers, administrators, anyone who paid into the TRS system long enough to be eligible for benefits. Note, TRS benefits are earned benefits. Contributions are deducted from salaries. They are not a handout. But in today's inflationary market, those earned benefits are far from a free ride. To create context and bring my hat-in-hand reference to life, consider these realities. Most public school retirees have not received a cost-of-living adjustment to their earned benefits in 20 years. Some 130,000 retired school employees make $1,000 a month or less, hardly a gravy train. And the average TRS benefit of $2,174 before taxes does not sound much better. To make matters worse, most retired school employees are not eligible to collect Social Security, not their own benefits or their spouse's benefits. That makes their TRS pension a primary source of income for many, and many are hurting. I give the Texas legislature due credit. 100% of the members of both houses voted to approve this cost of living increase for TRS annuitants. When last did you read that the Texas legislature had total consensus about any issue? Bottom line, your elected officials, both Republican and Democrat, recognize this as a critical need. And I don't know a TRS annuitant that is not grateful. In acknowledging this need, the legislature indicated a willingness to commit an estimated $3.3 billion from the state budget to cover the costs. Because the legislature was blessed with an enormous budget surplus this biennium, the commitment required no new taxes, not now and not ever. Point of fact, with 95% of TRS annuitants living in Texas, the surplus was one they helped to build, and anything they gain goes right back into our economy. Additionally, while the total package is large, individual cost of living adjustments will be quite modest. If passed, Proposition 9 provides a 2% increase for 150,000 TRS annuitants, those who retired between September 1, 2013 and August 31, 2020. A 4% increase for 195,000 TRS annuitants, those who retired between September 1, 2001 and August 31, 2013. And a 6% increase for 75,000 TRS annuitants, those who retired on or before August 31, 2001. Do the math. An annuitant eligible for the 6% COLA is probably one of the oldest in the group. If fortunate enough to receive an earned benefit of $2,174 a month, which is highly unlikely, they would receive an additional $130 a month. The increase won't pay for a vacation, but it might pay for medication, groceries, electric bills, and home repairs, all while contributing to the local economy. Here's where I come, hat in hand, on behalf of retired educators in Texas. The money for this cost of living increase is in the budget. The legislature has authorized its use for this purpose. However, 45 years ago, the voters of Texas approved a constitutional spending cap that limits growth in appropriations from one biennium to the next. And this budget item is caught in the crosshairs. Unless the voters of Texas approve Prop 9 and signal their support, the initiative will die. One out of every 20 Texans is a member of TRS. You know a TRS retiree. They are your neighbors, family members, part of your church community, your friends. They were loyal public servants and deserve support. More importantly, they probably help to care for and to educate your children. Sadly, many in this inflationary environment are down on their luck. No exaggeration, just facts. You can show that you care by voting yes for Prop 9 on November 7th. This is the Life Tributes column. Jeanette Adonna Harris. Jeanette Adonna Harris, age 61, of Midland, passed away on October 5th. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on October 14th at Mayberry Funeral Home in Midland. Juana Rosales Rodriguez. Juana Rosales Rodriguez, 99, of Stanton, passed away on October 6th. Visitation will be held on Tuesday, October 10th, from 9 a.m. until 8 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home Chapel, with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, October 11th, at St. Joseph Catholic Church. Interment will follow at St. Joseph Catholic Cemetery. Online condolences can be made at www.stantonfh.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, October 10th. Gardner faces the press after gun incident. With a room full of supporters in the audience, Ector County Commissioner Precinct 1, Mike Gardner, read a short statement Monday related to charges he's facing in Nebraska after a gun he was holding slipped and discharged, injuring his 12-year-old grandson. The statement was read in the commissioner's courtroom at the Ector County Annex Building. Gardner did not take any questions afterwards. Unless he is convicted, he can still serve as a commissioner. He hasn't been charged in court yet, and he bonded out before he was arraigned, Lancaster County Sheriff Terry Wagner said. The incident occurred September 30th in Denton, Nebraska, at his nephew's wedding, at which he was officiating. The gun was part of scripted wedding activities. The Washington Post reported that when Gardner realized he accidentally shot the boy in his left shoulder, guests jumped up immediately to assist the child, including Gardner's brother-in-law, who is a paramedic, he said. The boy initially wanted to stay, saying, "No, Pop, I'm okay," Gardner recalled. As the boy was being treated, Gardner went back to officiating the wedding with the bride seemingly unaware of what had happened, he said. Gardner later rode with his grandson in the ambulance to the hospital, the Post reported. "I don't remember it, but we finished the ceremony," the Post quoted Gardner as saying. "The whole thing was pretty fuzzy because I couldn't get my mind off of him." According to the Lancaster County, Nebraska Attorney's Office, Gardner is facing charges of child abuse and neglect, serious bodily injury. Jail Administrator Rick Gray said this is a felony 3A, which carries a penalty of 0 to 3 years imprisonment if imposed, 9 to 18 months in post-release supervision, a $10,000 fine, or both. Gray said the court sets the individual requirements. Lancaster County Attorney Patrick Condon said the investigation is ongoing. "Every now and again we'll have accidental shootings, but this is much more unusual than that. It's definitely unusual," Wagner said. Wagner said the gun was legal. "It wasn't illegal for him to load it like he did. He's responsible for being negligent with the weapon. I think that's kind of the bottom line," Wagner said. Nebraska just passed constitutional carry, which took effect September 1st. "I would imagine something like this could happen in the future, but we certainly have not seen a lot of weapons at weddings thus far," Wagner said. Gardner turned himself in October 2nd and was released the same day on a $10,000 bond. He will be arraigned at 2 p.m. November 3rd. "I was to fire a shot using a blank to signify the wedding participants were in place and the music should start so that the bride could be escorted to the aisle," Gardner said. "Unfortunately, there was a mishap with the gun, which resulted in my 12-year-old grandson being injured by the blank." He was taken to the hospital for treatment of non-life-threatening injuries and released. Thankfully, he is not expected to have any lasting disabilities because of the accident. I am extremely remorseful and thank God for ensuring his injury was not worse. I'll take accountability for the accident, and every day I relive those moments with dread. Currently, there are no charges filed against me. My next court appearance is set for November the 3rd. The situation does not affect my role as a county commissioner for Precinct 1, unless and until such a time I am convicted of a disqualifying charge. I will continue to act in this role and will seek re-election as well. My wife, Angela, has been the rock of our family through this, and we will continue to focus on making sure that the boys have what is needed to heal physically and emotionally. I thank you again. I thank all those who have reached out with prayers and support, and we're very thankful for the friends and family that have been here and supported me through this very difficult time. I ask that you continue your prayers of healing from my grandson. If you're representing the press or have any press organization, be sure to sign in and I will send out an email to you today, Gardner said. Wagner said there he has not been charged in court and he posted bond before he was arraigned. Jim Watkins, a retired educator and rodeo coach, offered a prayer before Gardner read his statement. Gardner said he's been a good friend, taught Gardner when he was in school, and has been a great mentor to him and many, many others. Father God, we come to you this morning with hat in hand and humbled. I want to give you all the praise and honor and glory for the fact that we live in a democratic nation where we have the right and the freedom to pray. We ask your special blessings today, Lord, especially over Israel, our country, our county, our families, and especially, Father God, Mike Gardner, Watkins said. We know that you said in Isaiah that we could cast all of our cares and troubles on you. This is one time we really want to call on you and ask you to take care of the situation. We know that you know what's going on, and we turn it over to you and put it in your hands and know you'll have the right outcome. We just thank you, Father God, for all of our many blessings. The fact that so many people are here in support of my old student in our commissioner who has served us so well. We just ask you to take care of the situation. We turn it over to you and give you all the glory. In Jesus' name we pray, amen, Watkins said. County Judge Dustin Fawcett said, at this time, it's about the healing of Gardner's grandson. He loves those kids. He takes care of those kids tremendously. Prayers are with them. Prayers are with their whole family as they navigate this. I wish them well in all this, Fawcett said. STEM Summit set for Saturday. Ector County ISD's Curriculum and Instruction Department has scheduled a STEM Summit Saturday, October 14th, in conjunction with the solar eclipse. This is a math and science summit open to pre-kindergarten through 12th grade teachers. It will be held at Odessa High School between 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. on October 14th. One of the activities will be the launch of a solar eclipse balloon. Lunch and snacks will be provided, and there will be prize giveaways. A flyer on the ECISD website has a link for teachers to register and a link for the professional development offerings they can attend. Registration opens for the 2024 Texas A&M Engineering Extension Service Leadership Development Symposium. Texas A&M Engineering Extension Service TEEX has announced that registration is open for the 2024 Leadership Development Symposium. The event will be held from January 8th through 10th, 2024 at the Embassy Suites Hotel and Convention Center in San Marcos. During the three-day event, Attendees hone their leadership skills in keynote and breakout sessions with speakers from various backgrounds and industries. The symposium, celebrating its 15th year, offers an unmatched opportunity for education and leadership development for the Texas Emergency Response community. Texas Emergency Response personnel can attend the event at no cost. Each year, the symposium attracts more than 1,000 emergency response professionals from across Texas and the United States. Attendees come from various response disciplines such as firefighting, law enforcement, EMS, and emergency management. For more information and to register, see tinyurl.com/EFVV79ZT. To access more leadership development content from TEEX, listen to the TEEX Response Leadership Podcast. First Tee West Texas hosts George W. Bush for upcoming fundraiser. First Tee West Texas will be hosting their upcoming fundraiser, Fairways for the Future, October 17th, featuring special guest of honor George W. Bush, Ben Crenshaw, and the Gatlin Brothers Band. Please see the schedule of events below. 4 p.m., the fundraiser will begin promptly with an exclusive group of large donors at First Tee National Golf Academy, located at 500 West Loop 250 North in Midland. 4 to 4:15 p.m., former President George W. Bush will give a dedication at First Tee. 4 to 5 p.m., cocktail hour for all other fundraiser attendees at Midland Chaparral Center. 5 p.m., doors lock. 5:15 to 5:45 p.m., program begins with a presentation by George W. Bush, Ben Crenshaw, and the Gatlin Brothers. 5:45 to 9 p.m., dinner, concert by the Gatlin Brothers Band, and live auction. First Tee West Texas is a chapter of First Tee, which is a national nonprofit organization headquartered in Florida. First Tee began in 1997 as a partnership among the LPGA, the Masters Tournament, and the PGA of America, the PGA Tour, and the USGA to make golf affordable and accessible for all kids. First Tee is committed to helping kids build character strengths and important life skills through the game and providing all kids with access to opportunities for personal growth in a fun and safe environment. To learn more about First Tee West Texas, please visit firstteewesttexas.org. Bushmans gift ECISD team members. Recently, John and Carol Bushman, on behalf of the entire ICA Corporation team, treated Ector County ISD veteran bus drivers and custodians to dinner at the MCM Elegante, then gave each of them a check for $500. Mr. Bushman said he was honored to recognize the people who form the foundation of the school district, but who can sometimes go unnoticed. This was an unbelievably generous gift to the team, a news release said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.